welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 249 of the podcast. And it is 26th of December 2015 as I record this on Boxing Day. And I hope you're all having a happy holiday season. And I must admit to being a little tired from a big family Christmas yesterday. There was much festive cheer and perhaps a little too much Prosecco. And so we're heading to Prague tomorrow morning very early. So today I'm just recording this early, and this is a very quick introduction. I'm basically not going to do anything except just say that next week, the first show in 2016, I will be doing a much more substantial show looking back at 2015 and also looking forward into 2016 and what will publishing predictions and looking back at my own goals for last year, this year and forward to next year, plus all the usual tweets and sponsorship, etc. will be back next week. I'll also be sharing more about my own creative process. I don't have an interview. But earlier this week, I recorded a session on my creative process. So expect a more personal show next week, and also expect more energy, as I'm somebody who just falls apart at the end of December, but I turn into the Energizer Bunny in the new year. I'm a total fan of the new year, so looking forward to that. So today I will just share this great interview with Kevin Tomlinson, who, like me back in 2011, is downsizing his life in order to focus on writing more. And I thought it was an appropriate conversation because it's the time of year when we all consider what is really important and what we want to achieve in the next 12 months, starting to think about that. So I hope this conversation gives you some thoughts as to what you want for 2016. And thank you so much for being a listener of the show. I really appreciate everybody who listens, and it makes it well worthwhile continuing to do this every week. A special thank you to everyone who supports the show on Patreon, plus an extra thank you if you have bought my books or courses in 2015. Your support means I can continue the show and the blog and continue this writing life, and also sharing the journey along the way. So much more will be coming in 2016. So happy holiday season and happy new year. And I will see you next week as we enter the new year. So here's the interview with Kevin. Today I'm here with Kevin Tomlinson. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Joanna. How are you?
I'm good. Great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Kevin is a speculative fiction author, blogger, and host of several podcasts, including The Wordslingers, Creative Writing Career, and Self-Publishing Answers. And we're going to come back to that in a minute. But just start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing background.
Well, I've actually been writing professionally since I was 12 years old, which is a fancy way of saying I got paid to write, but it doesn't mean I made a living doing it.
What did you get paid to write at 12 years old?
I was writing I was writing sort of an editorial for our local paper, sort of a teen beat kind of thing. So I went and covered events, and I, you know, talked to other teens in the area and got their opinions on things. So yeah, cool. It didn't pay much. It was like $10 a column, but I, you know, that was my first step into being paid as a writer. So I count it.
Yeah. Yeah. And from then,
the highlights. You know, and I went from doing that sort of thing all through school, all through high school and everything. And in college, I got involved in the newspaper, you know, arena there. Started writing fiction. Well, I've written fiction my whole life, really. I always tell it, the joke is I wrote my first book when I was 5 years old. That's what I tell everybody. And it was five pages of notebook paper, front and back. And I hand drew a cover and everything. So I was my own cover designer even back then. But fiction was kind of that thing that I always loved the most. And I started writing short stories, trying to market those and sell those. Didn't really have a lot of success. I hit a few magazines and got a few things published, and that was encouraging, but it wasn't all that lucrative. So I drifted into copywriting as a career for a while.
Right.
So, 'cause you can make money as a copywriter. A lot of people don't want to pay you to just sit around and write fiction, I guess.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So copywriting has been your main paid job?
Yeah, for a long time. I'm finally getting to a point where I'm starting to retire from that. My client list has been culled down quite a bit, and you know, those who do hire me, you know, they expect to pay a little more if they want me to write, and so it's getting a little better. I'm working on kind of closing that door, maybe just taking on the rare occasional client every now and then. But I'm mostly really happy to move away from copywriting as a career.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, I'm interested. I mean, because, of course, Sean Platt is to me the guy who moved, you know, the big guy who moved from copywriting. And,
right.
And Johnny B. Turin, of course. And do you what kind of, and if people don't know, you know, copywriting is the more business writing where people
right.
take action, and you can often write quite boring stuff, I guess.
Right.
But
right.
But there are a lot of skills that can transfer, I guess. But is it hard to change your mindset between the copywriting guy and the fiction guy?
You know, it really wasn't. I spent a lot of time. So a lot of copywriting I do is pretty boring. I mean, was pretty boring. I wrote like annual reports and white papers and that sort of thing. And actually, I became kind of known as that guy you go to when you want something that has a little, you know, a little bit of zip to it instead of just this straight, boring, you know. Mm-hmm. I wrote annual reports for companies and contributed to a few annual reports to some big name companies that had a little bit of flair to them. So at least I got to be creative in that way. But I think there's a lot of room. Most of the copywriting I did was for marketing and advertising. So I got to be pretty creative. A lot of it was B2B. And so you have to be careful about how you're creative. But yeah. Switching mindsets was never really a problem for me. The skills that transfer, really, just the discipline of sitting down each day and hitting a deadline is the biggest skill. Mm. And also, you know, I do credit my copywriting career with improving the general quality of my writing, because it's, you know, everyone thinks they're a good writer until they get notes back from editors and publishers and that sort of thing. And no one's a bigger critic than the person who paid you to write. So you learn a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, it helps with writing sales descriptions and
right.
Advertising, I suppose.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I find that one of the things that a lot of people struggle, a lot of authors, indie authors in particular, struggle with is like writing their pitch or their, some people call it their blurb or their back cover matter or whatever they call it. But I mean, a lot of people struggle with that kind of thing, or they struggle with writing an ad or, you know, just a basic description of their book. And I don't really have that struggle because I've done that for other people for so long. So I'm not saying they're perfect. They need improvement. And every now and then I go back and look and say, and cringe and say, wow, I could do that better. But at least I know. I mean, I can look at that and say, this is where it's weak. This is where it's strong. This is where I was just being lazy and trying to get it, you know, published right away.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that's definitely something on my list for next year, because we always go back over the books, don't we, that we've done in the past. But what we're talking about today, and, you know, one of the critical aspects about actually making a living as a writer, or with books in particular, as opposed to copywriting, is deciding what you're going to give up in
right.
order to achieve the things you want to achieve. And back in 2011, I did a massive downsize and shift from a 4-bedroom house to a 1-bedroom flat and,
right.
you know, changed a lot of stuff. And now you're going through something
yes.
right now, aren't you? So I wanted to talk to you about that. Tell us about these big changes that you're making and why.
Well, the first thing I want to point out is the parallel there, because we literally in November, which at the time of you and I chatting, it's mid-December. In November, towards the end of November, we sold our 4-bedroom house and we crammed everything into a 1-bedroom apartment. that's like the interim step. But yeah, we're moving into a sort of RV lifestyle. It's something my wife and I have talked about for years. And in the past couple of years in particular, we've become very interested in it. And that's required us to start thinking in terms of you know, what do we have that's weighing us down, that takes up more space than it should? And you know, what do we need to get rid of in order to fit? Because I don't know if you've looked at RVs lately, but they're not, you know, McMansions on wheels typically. I mean, you're not going to be able to cram four bedrooms in there. Mm. So we're having to make some tough decisions. This apartment is kind of one part of, as we said before the call, we're kind of in phase one where we've already gotten rid of a lot of our stuff. We've already started thinking in terms of how do we, you know, do the things we do with less, you know, fewer resources, I guess. And the apartment was kind of that interim step between the house and jumping directly into an RV. So we're buying actually a camper this weekend, actually. We've already picked it out. We've already put down deposits. And it's a small camper. It's not the one we'll live in full time. But it's that kind of, you know, it's the runabout in terms of Star Trek. Like, it's the one that we're taking away from the mothership for a while and branching out. And then we move on from there. It's been adventurous, we'll say.
Yeah. So let's get into that in more detail. So why did you decide to do this?
So a big part of it is literally every time we've traveled to made a big deal of travel, I guess. We've gone overseas together. We've traveled to various places in the U.S. I've literally sat down and written a book while we were there. I mean, it's kind of uncanny. And it's not that I don't write books while at home. It's just that the stuff I'm churning out when we're out and traveling has this flavor to it that is just remarkable. And so it really was the decision kind of came around as in part because it adds flavor to my work. It adds a whole new dimension to the work. Mm. But we're very sedentary. I sit in front of a computer all day long. So does my wife. And we kind of every now and then look up and notice that the tint of the sky has changed or something, you know, and we just want to put ourselves in a position where it's far more likely that we're going to get out and live and experience things than we are going to watch them on TV or something, you know. So that was a big motivator, actually.
That is so funny because on my wall, I have a lot of things on my wall. So I say this quite a lot on the show, and there's always something new. But
you have to turn the camera. You got to show me.
Yeah, well, maybe I will. But this thing says "Right to Live." What is living today?
Yeah.
And that exactly, travel's the same for me. I have to travel not all the time. I get itchy foot syndrome, my husband calls it. And being away, that just adds, well, it's all my writing comes from travel, actually.
Right.
So I really get that. And that living more is so important because we can get so obsessed with, whatever the next, and it will never stop, will it, as writers? This won't stop until like the day we die.
No, and in fact, something interesting happened recently because I pinged my mailing list to just sort of ask, like, what would you like to see next? Because there are passion projects I want to pursue. Mm. And one of those was I want to start writing more narrative nonfiction. And my list liked that idea, but they overwhelmingly asked for a sequel to Evergreen, yeah, which is fine. And the Evergreen is definitely my favorite book of whatever I've written. But you know, the narrative nonfiction has a place in my heart because I love authors like Malcolm Gladwell and, Bill Bryson and, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert. I love those writers and I love what they do. And I wanted to do something in that vein, but I have literally sat down 100 times to start something I thought was going to be that book. And ultimately, I realized I hit bottom very quickly. Mm. And it's not because I don't have the experiences already. It's more that I don't have anything, there's no passion behind it because I'm too distanced from those experiences. And I feel like getting out and experiencing more of the world around us as we travel will energize me and push me to write that kind of thing. Like I'll be impassioned. I can draw on my past experiences using the energy of the present moment. That's kind of the idea.
Mm. Oh no, I think that would be great. I think it's a brilliant idea. But of course, everyone's now going, what about your wife? So what does your wife do? And, you know, how did that conversation go? Because I mean, my husband also obviously downsized with me. And it's I get emails from people who say, this is a difficult conversation to have. So how right. did you do that? And how's she adapting?
Here's where I'm phenomenally lucky. Because, well, actually, it's interesting because I've pitched this idea over the years. The first time I ever mentioned living in an RV was shortly after we got married. And my wife's exact words were, wow, that's really attractive. And so she wasn't on board with that for a long time. But it just seems that at, you know, the longer we know each other, the more in tune we kind of get with this idea. She loves to travel too. She grew up overseas. She was an expat. You know, she was used to living in places like Singapore and, you know, areas like that. So she kind of misses that too. So it wasn't tough to talk her into it. But, you know, as far as her work and that sort of thing, we're still figuring out what she's going to do when we're on the road, because we feel like we'll probably be able to support ourselves just fine from, you know, from my income. I don't think that's going to be an issue. It's just that no one wants to be the tag along. And where she's coming in on this is she is a big fan of history. And so we're looking at ways that she can use that passion while we're moving around. And, you know, she's a project manager by trade right now. There are opportunities for her to continue working on the go. We're looking into some of that. But, you know, it wasn't tough. Actually, she's kind of talked me into it more than anything recently, because I kind of got to a point where I was more or less I was sort of resigned to this is where we live and we'll just travel every now and then. Mm. I had kind of given up on that. But she got on fire for this nearly a year ago now. And it's led to us selling our home and, you know, we're buying a camper and we're, you know, we've taken steps. Yeah, it's moving quick now.
Which I think is really interesting. Just on the history, do you know Dan Carlin's Hardcore History podcast?
Yes.
Yeah, and for the listeners, my husband loves it. It's sort of 4 hours long, 8 hours long, some of these right, shows. They're right. absolutely amazing. But right. but that what's so interesting now is you can say something like, oh, my wife's interested in history, and I immediately think of someone who's making a full-time living out of history.
And that's right.
And you can make a full-time living from an RV, and I can make one, you know, from my laptop wherever I right. am as well. And right. this is what's so exciting about the world we live in. But I wanted to ask you some more about the downsizing. So, I mean, I found it incredibly liberating, and I don't get very attached to things in general. Right. Like, I don't like things. I like experiences. I don't right. really like presents. I love one of the big things we did, I guess, was we got rid of nearly 2,500 print books and moved to digital. So what are some of the big the big shifts in terms of stuff and okay. what has surprised you?
That we did that and that
you
made me cry.
You have to, yeah.
You have to, yeah. I mean, I was in no way prepared for the emotional impact of seeing these books go. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if they have this in the UK. We have Half Price Books in my area. It's a it's a bookstore that will buy back your books at a discounted price, and I shop there all the time. But, you know, taking my little babies in and handing them these boxes of books, and, you know, having to do it, and what was worse was it was exhausting to carry everything in, hurt me physically to carry everything in. And then I had to sit and watch them go paw through my books, you know.
And so throw some aside because they're not worth anything.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, this, and you know, you just know that's going in the dumpster, you know? Like, no. But yeah, so that was a challenge. Things that kind of hit us, nostalgia has been our biggest enemy in this, actually. It's tough to overcome. We had three separate garage sales and made quite a bit of money. We sold quite a few things. And really, when we had the house all staged and people were coming through and looking, and we thought, we're ready. This stuff, this is nothing, you know. And this is, you know, a few rooms worth of stuff, and we can compact this down to a storage unit. But it turned out it was, you know, a lot more than we thought. And where we thought we had really culled down our, you know, sort of physical footprint, you know, we're still pretty big, which is why we changed the plan slightly. Because originally it was sell the house, walk into an RV, start driving. And we realized pretty quickly, we couldn't do that. So now we have a storage unit. We have this apartment. This apartment contains a lot of items all on its own, but we're spending some time. We've signed a year lease. So we're spending the next year going through the things that we have, selling things, giving things to family. And that's what it all comes down to, is you got to make that emotional separation. And what we're finding is I get rid of something I've held on to, books, a piece of furniture, you know, and it's ridiculous what we hold on to. My wife is holding on to her grandmother's bed, not the cool headboard, like sleigh bed frame or any of that, but a box spring and a mattress. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Like stuff you can buy at any given Walmart, she's holding on to out of nostalgia. But that's the trick there, is to make that emotional separation. And then suddenly you discover you've tapped into this whole new well of energy. Like it's just, it's almost like magic. Like suddenly I get rid of this, you know, armoire or something that I have no real emotional attachment to. It was just handed to me by a family member, you know, and I ask around and no one wants it. And I start to realize I'm paying money to hold on to something that no one else in my family wanted. And I feel bad about giving it away. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the things that are very challenging. I mean, the real challenges are, you know, yet to come, I believe, because there are things we're figuring out. And I've got some tips for people if you're interested. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're learning a lot about, you know, how we're going to manage our actual lives while we're on the road. But downsizing has been challenging, and it continues to be a challenge. And I guess my advice is, you know, you're going to have to ask yourself some hard questions about what is the purpose of this thing. Mm-hmm. And am I using it for that purpose, or am I just holding on to it? And, you know, I grew up in a household that came through the Depression. So, you know, it was always save everything. My grandfather had a rubber band ball the size of my head that, you know, none of the rubber bands were any good anymore, but we have this giant rubber band ball. So yeah, it's those emotional attachments will kill you.
Yeah. And I know some people are thinking, but I like my emotional attachments.
Yes.
And we're, of course, not saying that everyone should do this type of life. But I found, I guess going back to the reason why, in order to make a full-time living with books, it's better to define your full-time living as less than it would be if you have a four-bedroom house and a mortgage. And we had two cars and we had an investment property. And there were so many things that were stopping me from doing this full-time. And they were all financial ties that then you build up a life to fit into what you're expected to be. So, and you, once you own a four-bedroom house, you have to fill it with stuff. Whereas now you've got a one-bedroom flat, you know, you have to say no to how much stuff. Now, that emotional attachment over time is really interesting, because what we ended up doing was we got rid of the house. We put everything in storage and left for a year. So we actually came back to England at the time, and our storage unit was in Australia. Right. By the time we went back a year later, we were like, what the hell? Why did we keep this?
Yeah,
you know, and you realize that you just need that bit of distance. So the stuff you put in that storage unit, even when you get the RV, eventually you'll go back to it and just be over it. So I agree with you. It takes like a number of steps to get that. And of course, I still have a couple of boxes here in my room of stuff I will never get rid of, but it literally is a couple of boxes as opposed to, and all my diaries, which are behind me. I do have increasingly more diaries.
Well, I think it's kind of, and I do too. I mean, that's the cost of being a writer, and they are heavy. I try as I might, I'm only just now starting to journal on an app rather than a
book.
Yeah,
I won't do that. I just won't do that because
it doesn't feel
technology.
Right.
It will fail at some point.
I still have my Moleskines. I still have a collection of those. So I'll always have that because I have a love affair with ink and paper. But yes, there are going to be things that you will want. You not only will want to hold on, you should hold on to.
Absolutely.
You definitely shouldn't get rid of journals, and you definitely shouldn't get rid of, you know, something priceless that reminds you of someone you love.
But not a bed. I agree with that.
But not a bed. No. No.
I mean,
you know, if there were a comforter or something, you know, even if it was some bargain basement, you know, garage sale purchase that her grandmother had made, fine. I could live with certain things, but a box spring. I mean, yeah. But yeah, that's
that's good. But you mentioned some of the ways that you're going to change, things and the way you're going to work. So tell us some of those things you've been thinking.
So some of the problems you come across when you're thinking about going completely mobile are, you know, you always get asked questions like, how are you going to get your mail and how are you going to get prescription drugs and things like that. And, you know, we have to deal with those. My wife has a couple of prescriptions we have to keep up with. But there are a lot of services out there. And, for example, we're not yet courting them. We're about to become members of a group called Escapees RV Club, which I don't know if they're international or not, but I love the name. Mm. But they are they have a lot of benefits for members. Things like, you know, you can use them as a permanent mailing address. They have a job center, so if you are an author, for example, and you're not quite making a living at it, or your spouse wants to do some work, you can find jobs through their job board, which are typically, you know, they can be full-time or they can be part-time or seasonal or whatever. There's a lot out there. Another group that does that is Work Camper, and that's WORKAMPER, and they are a that's kind of a movement more than anything. But Work Camper News is all about connecting you with possible job opportunities, like jobs you can do in exchange for, you know, RV lots, things like that. But these, you know, you have a lot of services out there like this, and they'll do things like scan your mail for you, or you know, forward your prescription drugs to wherever you happen to be, that sort of thing. And so there's a lot of that stuff we're discovering. And I'll be honest, that's kind of the fun of this, is I'm going through and discovering all these like apps and websites and clubs and things. And, you know, the cost of these things is really fairly low when you start thinking about, you know, what you're getting out of it. It's almost like having a VA to go through your mail. I mean, come on, that's just cool, you know.
That is good. And of course, you just increasingly go more and more digital. You know, that's just the benefit of it as well. Is you just you scan everything, and you have, you know, everything's on Dropbox or whatever. And yeah, I mean, I think that's true whether you're going to move into an RV or if you're just kind of decluttering. And I guess I think that, well, this will be going out to, you know, end of December, beginning of January 2016. And, you know, even if people don't want to move into an RV, like, now's a really good time to be looking at like what's really important, isn't it? And
yeah,
and that's kind of what you're doing, is you're examining what's important in your life.
And in the end, I think that's really it just sort of comes down to that as the point. We tend to hold on to the things. We're just humans in general. We tend to hold on to things and things we don't necessarily need. I used to have a huge DVD collection, you know, thousands of them, and I stream. At one point, my wife and I realized that we hadn't watched a DVD in, you know, almost the entire 10 years we've been married. And, you know, books, I owned hundreds, maybe thousands of books. And most of the ones that I love and reread, I have on my Kindle, so I can do that. But so there is that sort of reducing, what's the term? I read a book recently called Abundance, The Future is Better Than
Anything. That is one of my favorite books.
Absolutely, right?
Peter Diamandis. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And the one of the principles he talked about was miniaturization, which is that idea of, you know, I don't need a bookshelf full of books. I've got a device. Actually, I just read off my iPhone. I have a 6 Plus, so it's a big screen. My wife reads off of her iPad. I don't need a bookshelf crammed full of books. I might have it because I enjoy that. There's always that tactile experience. I'm getting more comfortable, by the way, with buying a physical book and reading it and then giving it away, or selling it sometimes. But I prefer to give them away. I want to give that book to somebody who's going to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So I'm becoming more comfortable with that. And through that act, by the way, there's something that happens to your soul. I mean, there's just this, you know, you get a little more free, but you also get a little stronger. You realize that all this stuff is not what defines you. And I think that's why we hold on to things, because we have this erroneous conception that these things define us. I know I do. I mean, I hold on to stuff. I constantly find myself, you know, regretting little things that I lost or gave away or stolen or whatever. And I kick myself over that, and there's no reason to. That that wasn't a part of me. It was just part of my story for a time, and now it's gone.
Yeah, and I actually really love print on demand, and I wish all authors had print on demand, because sometimes I want to give a book to people and as a gift or whatever, and I go to order it, and they don't, and it's literally out of print. Now, who would have thought in the days of print on demand that any book would be out of print? And you know, it's kind of like, it's crazy. But what I love about our books, you know, you and I as indies, if we need our books at any point in your journey, you just order it online, and it will be delivered. Right. So that's the thing. It's really not a big deal. But I wanted to ask you just one more thing on the downsizing and the changing things, is that is the fear aspect. So what are the fears that you've had, and how are you tackling those?
So, you know, there's always the big ones. The biggest is always income. You know, like, is my income stable? Am I going to have money? Am I going to find myself, you know, broke and living on the streets? And of course I won't, because I'll have an RV. So,
but just be parked up somewhere.
So that, you know, that's a fear. And the other fear is that, you know, we'll get out in the wilderness somewhere and something will happen, and, you know, we don't have a way to find help, or, you know, there's, you know, we're distanced from family and something happens to family. There's all those fears. The trouble with that thinking, though, is, you know, that stuff could happen anyway. I mean, if I take a trip to Europe next month, just for the heck of it, I could get a phone call, you know, midair, something bad could happen. And, you know, those things, that just happens. That's just life. That's what life is. And the way we're mitigating fears about, like, our finances, I mean, we've sold some properties. We have some assets that we're kind of liquidating, and that's becoming sort of a backup fund. You know, we're paying down any debts we have. That helps. You know, our monthly overhead is being dramatically reduced as a part of this, which was very important to us. And then, you know, I have the writing as a stream of income. I have little trickles from other ventures that I'm involved in that help with income. And it's not like I'm going to cease to do entrepreneurial things when I step out of this apartment. I mean, we're constantly looking at ways that we can kind of boost that income stream. So that's the biggest fear. Another fear is, of course, you know, will we be at each other's throats, or, you know, something along those lines. And I've talked to a number of people who have done this, who have stepped out and gone into a full-time RV lifestyle. And overwhelmingly, the response I get from those people is that, far from putting each other at each other's throats, they actually get along much better. They learn to adapt to each other. It's a little bit like, I'm sure you've read 4-Hour Work Week, and there's a bit in there where he talks about this woman who travels with her kids, and they were always bickering and fighting, but suddenly they're on a sailboat and they got nothing to do but get along. So it's kind of that idea. I think that you grow closer. There are these little fears, but as we come up with a fear, my response is generally go find the solution and figure out how you deal with that. And, you know, I have a pacemaker because of a birth defect in my heart. I have a pacemaker. I had to answer questions like, you know, what do I do when I need checkups for that? You know, what happens if something goes wrong with it, and I don't have my cardiologist down the street, you know? So those questions are, they need to be answered, but they don't have to dictate what you do next. Or if they dictate what you do next, they don't have to stop you from doing the thing that you're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you mentioned the eliminating debt, because we did, you know, we eliminated our debt by changing the structure. I mean, as soon as you restructure anything, so if people listening are like, yeah, but I'm not going to do that. If you look at what you want to achieve and then you restructure things, even if it doesn't have to be your full-time income, you know, like we do, it could be a percentage. And just by changing your mindset, I remember the day when I kind of realized that the only thing stopping me was my own, the way that I had created my life and had built up all these expectations. And if I just changed my own expectations of what was important and what life I could live, then everything would be different. Right. And it was just an amazing kind of turnaround. And that day changed my life.
Well, you know. Yeah, what we keep finding is we keep sort of panicking over things. You get into this tendency of thinking the life you have right now and the way your life works right now is exactly how it has to continue.
Yeah.
So we start thinking of things like, you know, and I'm struggling to come up with a really good example, but I mean, you think about how you make dinner, for example.
Yeah.
And we have lots of kitchen gadgets. We have lots of pots and pans, but we're not going to have room for all that in the RV. What do we do? How do we eat? We're going to starve to death.
Cook dinner.
And the reality of it is, I mean, for example, we have an outdoor kitchen for the RV. The world becomes our kitchen at that point. I've got, you know, I don't need every kitchen gadget that I have in order to prepare a meal. So you figure it out. You figure out how to we're in the process now of downsizing the amount of kitchen gadgets we actually have to, like, here are three gadgets that do the job of these 25 gadgets.
Yeah.
So you start thinking a little differently. I love this whole tiny house movement.
Oh, I love the tiny house thing too. It's very American. We don't really have it so much in Europe, but I love the tiny house porn. You know, all the little pictures.
Yes.
I'm not,
yes.
You know, they're so cute.
Yes, because it's, and I don't know what it is about that appeals to me in particular or anyone in general, but there is something to be said for reducing your footprint, and not in the sort of hippie way, you know, not in the green sense, although there is an impact
there.
But, and that's wonderful, and don't get me wrong, but what it does for you personally, I mean, first of all, there's less for you to worry about. I don't have to worry about, you know, what happens if there's a fire and all these things are destroyed. I mean, if that did happen, I would just start over exactly the way we're doing.
Just walk out your tiny door.
Exactly. So, and how much space do you really need? I mean, one thing I miss is my sound booth in my little studio from my home.
Yeah.
I honestly thought I was going to really regret that. And when I start, you know, I do these podcasts, I have to have quiet. I have to have, you know, a certain level of quality. And what I discovered was I actually had alternate equipment that I could set up very easily. You're seeing one of those pieces right now in this video, but I have this whole miniaturized setup that replicates what I was doing in my big studio setting. And I love that. I love rethinking. And I think that's important, you know, as an author, you know, to be able to take those disparate ideas and pieces and rethink them and put them back together again. That's really what we're doing. We're writing the story of our lives by rethinking what we have.
You know? What we have. And I do, I mean, the biggest thing for me is the internet. I mean, basically, if you've got a laptop, a phone, internet access, your world is actually huge. I mean, you actually have, the expanse is in your mind and it's on the internet. So
that's that miniaturization.
Yeah, that's kind of the difference, isn't it? And you can have your social life. You can have, you know, there are lots of things you can do through the internet. So that's very, very cool. So I just want, before we finish up, because you and I could clearly talk about this forever.
Yeah,
but I wanted just to tell us about the podcasts you have and why do you have so many podcasts?
I started with Wordslinger Podcast, and I literally started that so that I'd have an opportunity to talk to people like you and a few others, Jonathan Mayberry, who you mentioned you really like. And the reason was I needed an excuse to be able to ask these people the questions that were most pressing for me. And I thought, you know, well, I should be generous with this information and share it. So that was podcast number one. And then I actually at a time where I was considering adding coaching to my business, which I did for a time, and I still do occasionally, I started talking to a lot of different author coaches, and I came across Nick Thacker. And, you know, and you've been on his show, actually. You were on his show before he and I connected. But in my conversation with him, we really hit it off, and he was doing a Self-Publishing Answers podcast, and on a whim one day, I just asked him, "Hey, are you looking for a second host? You know, have you ever considered that?" And he, you know, Nick's an amicable guy. He's like, "Sure, come on." You know, so he literally just on a whim added me to his show, and we did great. Now we've added Justin Sloan, who is the author of Creative Writing Career, And then Justin, every time he gets an idea, he starts a podcast for it. So he has a couple of his own, but he created the Creative Writing Career Podcast. And that's me and Justin and Stefan Bugay, who is formerly from Pixar. And those two guys know each other from they write games for a living, which is cool. And sort of the purpose behind all those, I mean, you know, self-publishing answers is sort of in your vein. It's talking to the self-publishing industry, and we're trying to answer the questions we have, really, when it comes down to it. We want to know things. And so we talk about it, we investigate, and we interview people. It's an open format. Creative Writing Career was really Justin's brainchild, and it was more about, you know, there's more to creative writing as a career than just self-publishing. And, you know, there's game writing, there's films, there's, you know, TV, there's, you know, a crazy list of jobs you can get into, comic books, that sort of thing. So we wanted to create something that spoke to that and opened up these channels to people to discover new ways to make a living being creative. So it's been a blast. That show actually by far has become much more popular, I believe, than the others. And that doesn't hurt my feelings at all. It might hurt Nick's feelings, I don't know. Nick's a good guy. He's pretty laid back, so he'll be.
Yeah. I know a lot of people ask me, because podcasting has just become so big in general. Because that's a lot of time that you're spending podcasting. How does that fit into your business model?
Sideways.
And how would you recommend start a podcast? Because it does take so much.
It does take time. Yeah. The way it fits in my business model, it helps with promoting my work. I like that aspect of it. Helps me build a following. I think that a lot of my readers are listeners and enjoy at least the Wordslinger podcast. A lot of my readers aren't all that interested in self-publishing. So in that aspect, it didn't help boost my book sales. But I focus on story in the Wordslinger podcast. It's like a behind the scenes kind of look at everyone else's life. As it fits my business model, it's a means of personal growth more than anything. I do get a small trickle of income from it. So it is handy as an additional stream of income. But that's fairly rare. In my experience, you know, podcasts don't make money very often. So unless that's really a passion project for you, I'd recommend not starting a podcast and instead concentrating on something else. However, if you are, say, someone like Justin Sloan, who is very passionate about what he does and wants to share, I would say the reason to get into it is not so much for you, but for the listener. I continue to do these podcasts, even though at times I kind of wonder, like, what am I getting out of it? Because I don't always get much out of it. But the fact is, I love the fact that I'm sharing these stories with people I interview, that I'm sharing information I learn, that I'm sharing the expertise of others. I love the fact that I'm helping a community larger than my immediate, you know, surroundings. I do it. Sounds so hammy. I do it for the listener. And if you're interested in podcasting, that has to be at the heart of what you do. Because if you know, you're going to run out of steam if you're just, you know, I'm really interested in, you know, pick a topic. I'm really interested in RV life, so I'm going to do an RV podcast. Great. You know, and that's going to last you for a while. And it's an endless source of material, but how much energy do you want to put into it? And how passionate are you about it? Your passion will run out. But if you're doing it because you want to keep feeding the needs of others, then that passion kind of renews itself. So that's what I'd recommend. It's more abstract than practical, of course. So,
yeah. And I think it's funny, like you say, I mean, I think I'm going into year six now.
Yeah, you've been around for a while.
I know, it's kind of crazy. And yeah, it definitely didn't make any money for 5 years. That was never the aim. The aim was not that. It was always to learn, as you've said, and talk to people I want to talk to. So it was great to talk to you today. So where can people find you and your books and your shows online?
You can find all of those if you go to kevintomlinson.com, which I know is not the easiest thing in the world to spell, so I assume you'll have it in your show notes. But if kevintomlinson.com, and of course I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and I always use Kevin Tomlinson as my username, so I'm easy to find.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Kevin. That was great.
Thank you so much. I love talking to you.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.